I'm going to go ahead and get started here. Get going and things. Let's head over to Isaiah 42. Isaiah chapter 42. We'll get a running reminder here of where we're at with this. It's quoted in Matthew chapter 12, speaking specifically about Jesus and his healings and his ministry and the things that he was doing. And we've gone through the first part, my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom my soul delights. Talk about how when the voice from heaven said, "This is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased," the thrust of that is really that he delighted in him, as he also does in us. "I put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations." We're still saving that one. Actually, hopefully we'll get that today. I'm not going to make any promises. Given the way that things have been going, I make no promises as to what we'll cover. "He will not cry out or raise his voice, nor make his voice heard in the street." And so we kind of talked about that Jesus wasn't a rabble-rouser kind of person coming up, but it was just through his teaching and the quality of his teaching plus then his healings then that generated the crowds. Verse 3, "A bruised reed he will not break, a dimly burning wick he will not extinguish. He'll faithfully bring forth justice." So we talked a little bit about just Jesus and his dealings with people, that he wasn't ready to crush people. He wasn't ready to put out the one who was barely flickering. Verse 4 is where we spent all of our time. Interesting thing. Last Lord's Day, we covered verse 4. We spent a lot of time on "He will not be disheartened or crushed." And then for the Lord's Supper meditation, the communion meditation, Jeff, you did that, right? And you took us through Isaiah 42 again. My wife is not in these classes. She doesn't listen to the tapes or anything, just because I haven't gotten around to downloading them for her and those kind of things. So she has no clue what's going on up here. And on the way home, or the way out of here last Lord's Day, she was really excited about Jeff's communion meditation. And she said, "There was one part of it that just jumped out at me." I said, "What was that?" She said, "It was the part where it says, 'He will not be disheartened or crushed.'" I said, "Yeah, that was what our class was about last as well, you know." So it was interesting how those things kind of work and how those things do jump out, you know, because like we talked about last week, we have a lot of things in our lives that could dishearten us, that could discourage us. We talked some about the idea, again, burned out on Christianity or whatever. But when you compare it with Jesus, we've not faced anything yet compared to what he has to be disheartened. If anybody had reason to be disheartened, it was Jesus, and he wasn't. Now, what we want to look at a little bit today is a little bit more of verse 4. It says, "He will not be disheartened or crushed until he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands will wait expectantly for his law." Now, last week, Tom asked a question from this that we didn't get a chance to address. And Bob wanted to make a comment, which we also didn't get a chance to address. So we'll get to those today. That's where we want to pick it up at. In verse 4, it says, "He will not be disheartened or crushed until he has established justice in the earth." And Tom's question was, is that in reference to his crucifixion? That he wasn't disheartened, he wasn't crushed until his crucifixion. Is that pretty close to where? Okay, I want to make sure I quoted accurately there, or got the right idea. Okay, so we're going to take off on that just a little bit here about disheartened or crushed until he has established justice in the earth. Now, go over to Isaiah 53. Isaiah 53, just an incredible prophecy. Just going through Jesus and the things that he would face. You know, and I think I've told you before that I enjoy just when I'm studying with somebody, just first to read through this whole thing and then ask them, who does that seem like it's talking about to you? Just to get their take on it. Did it again this past week, and the guy read through it. And we got to the end, and you know, he was feeling a little pressure anyway, you know. He's, because I told him I was going to ask him what it was about when we got to the end. So he's paying attention as we're going through it, and he said it's like taking a test here. So I got to the end, and I said, so who does that sound like it's about? And he said, Jesus. I said, good. So even a guy that doesn't have a whole lot, a ton of knowledge of the Bible still could figure out, reading through this, that it's talking about Jesus. Anyone with any basic knowledge of Jesus and what he's done gets that out of Isaiah 53. So we want to look at verse 4. We'll start at verse 4, but we're actually going to focus on 5. Surely our griefs he himself bore and our sorrows he carried, yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God and afflicted. We talked about that verse in reference to his healings. Verse 5, but he was pierced through for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The chastening for our well-being fell upon him, and by his scourging we are healed. Okay, pierced through for our transgressions. He's hanging on the cross at the very end of everything. He's pierced through. Also, says he was crushed for our iniquities. Chastening for our well-being fell upon him. By his scourging, the beating, we are healed. And so you get there that whole picture of the suffering that Jesus faced at his crucifixion, or that particular day. Now, but what I want us to notice is it says he was crushed for our iniquities. Same prophet, Isaiah, using the same word, crushed. In reference, in this case, to his death and the things, the activities, the events that took place at his death. Crushed for our iniquities. Go back to Isaiah 42 and let's see our crushing. Isaiah 42:4. He will not be disheartened or crushed until he has established justice in the earth. Just a side note, what did Jesus cry out as he was hanging on the cross? Which translated means, right, Eli lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? Quoting from Psalm 22. I believe that's Psalm 22:1. Okay. Does that sound a little disheartened? See, it was definitely a low point. Definitely. Now, part of it, you could go back. Let's flip over to Psalm 22. And Psalm 22, you can go through and you can see the prophecies of his crucifixion. We'll pick it up from verse 14. I am poured out like water, and all my all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax; it is melted within me. My strength is dried up like a potsherd. My tongue cleaves to my jaws, and you lay me in the dust of death. Dogs have surrounded me; a band of evildoers has encompassed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. They look; they stare at me. They divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. You know, and then you get the cry for salvation. But the beginning of that, 22 verse 1, is, my God, why have you forsaken me? Far from my deliverance are the words of my groaning. And so you have that cry at the beginning of it. Psalm 22, Jesus, reading through it, do you think he understood what that was all about? You think he understood that's about him? That was about his death? Did he understand the 22:1, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know, you could maybe try to make a case that he was just trying to fulfill all that scripture. And so it starts out there, my God, why have you forsaken me? So he just decides to say that. But I'm not going to go there. Think what you got going on. Yes, he would have known this. He would have understood it. He would have been totally familiar with what he was going to face. And the picture of anguish, the picture of anguish that's going on there in Psalm 22. But let's start from Psalm 22:1 and see how it ends a little bit. Not how it ends, but see how it continues. My God, why have you forsaken me? Far from my deliverance are the words of my groaning. Oh, my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer. By night, but I have no rest. Yet you are holy, O you who are enthroned upon the praises of Israel. Which is a just side note, one of the megachurch favorite verses, in case you didn't know that. For their worship time, you know, he's enthroned upon the praises of Israel. So we're going to sing praises to him and enthrone him. Just in case you weren't aware of that one that's out there. But notice the focus is, even though there's the despair, my God, why have you forsaken me? Then you have the hope as well. But, you know, you are holy, you are enthroned upon the praises of Israel. What you have with Jesus hanging on the cross is, I guess, an accurate picture of what he's facing. Not only did you have the physical suffering, but as we saw in Isaiah 53, it says he was crushed for our iniquities. You know, that as he's hanging on the cross, he's taken all of the sins of all the people of all time upon him, upon himself. And so, yes, it is a cry of despair. It is a cry of disheartenment, in a sense. You know, think to your lives. Think to the times when you have been disheartened, perhaps as a Christian even. What was it that disheartened you? I would say, generally speaking, it's sin. You know, the accusation that says that the teaching about perfection just, you know, leads everybody to suicide and all, you know, which is not true. But if not, then we're all, I guess we got to schedule our dates for when we're going to do it. But the idea of that, you know, the fact is, as when a Christian does stumble, if they stumble, then there is a disheartening that comes with that. Now, imagine from Jesus' perspective. Now, side note, there's also a getting up from that. You know, you don't remain disheartened unless you remain in the sin. You get up, you go on. That's the whole idea of the new creation, is every day is a new day. Every minute's a new minute. And so, yeah, yesterday's gone. It's out of the way. And so you don't remain disheartened. But before that brief period, you can become disheartened. Jesus is hanging on the cross. All of the sins have come upon him. Would that not be disheartening? Now, it says he was not disheartened, he was not crushed until there would be a time that he would be disheartened, a time that he would be crushed. And we get that. Now let's go back to Isaiah 42. Anybody have comments at this point? Okay, let me get Scott over here.
I've just wondered, like in Isaiah where it says that he's a man of sorrow, acquainted with grief, how that fits, because, you know, in his life, I'm sure that he had times where he was disheartened before the cross, you know. I mean, there are times where the scriptures, you know, bring out that he was.
It's a good question. He's talking about Isaiah 53, says the prophecy was that he would be a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. Actually, let's go over and look at that so we can make sure that we're being accurate on here. And Scott's question is, would he not have been disheartened prior to that? Would there not have been times of disheartening? That's Isaiah 53, verse 3. It says he was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and like one from whom men hide their face. He was despised, and we did not esteem him. And then it goes on and talks about that. Surely our griefs he himself bore, and our sorrows he carried. if we've got it, we've got to be consistent. So Isaiah 42 says he will not be disheartened or crushed until. Yet he was a man of sorrows and a man of, he was acquainted with grief. Is it possible to be sorrowful and acquainted with grief without being disheartened? I have to say, yeah. So I think with that, yeah, he was acquainted with grief. There were times of sorrow. I mean, and you do get at times where he say, for his, he would say like with his apostles, you know, was it apostles he's saying this? Could be some disciples, but anyway, where he says, you know, how long must I remain with this perverse generation? I mean, I think sometimes, you know, sometimes you do get a little sense of, I don't know if you'd say frustration, but not that would lead to anger, an unrighteous anger. So I think what you have is, yeah, he's acquainted with grief. He's acquainted with sorrows. He's going through all the emotions probably that every one of us go through. I mean, if he's been tempted in every way that we are, then the emotional aspect of things would have had to have been there. So he would have had those emotions, but whether or not he allowed it to dishearten him, I think didn't happen until where he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? And I think it's at that point, it's because all of the sins are coming upon him, and that's what's disheartening him. Ken, you said you had something, right? Do you still remember it?
I forget how to say it now, but he knew no sin, but became sin for us. So that would be a little disheartening.
Right, right. 2 Corinthians 5:21. He who knew no sin became sin on our behalf that we might become the righteousness of God in him, Christ in him, something like that. Yeah. So, right. He didn't know any sin. He hadn't, not personally sinned. He was acquainted with it from seeing the mistakes of everybody else, but actually taking it upon himself is what's going on the cross, which would be the disheartening. Rain, you had something.
Basically, I was just going to talk just a little bit about what you had just mentioned, his acquaintance with ours. In Revelation 7, verse 17, it says, "For the Lamb in the center of the throne shall be their shepherd and shall guide them to springs, to the springs of the water of life, and God shall wipe every tear from their eyes." And so, his acquaintance with grief and sorrow can be from our perspective of dealing with ours. So, and that's also our hope to get up and get moving is that he will wipe away all of the tears of our concerns and worries.
Ed. Jesus did have a lot, you know, when you're working with people, any of you guys have worked with somebody, you do, you know, I had an interesting discussion with Mike Harbor, not you, Mike Harbor, your dad, Mike Harbor, about when you're working with people and watching, you know, you invest yourself, you invest your time, you pour yourself into people, and then you watch the choices that they make and the way they're hurting themselves. Does that not bring you some grief? Does that not bring you some sorrow? You know, I think you're right there, Rain, that, you know, Jesus dealing with people, working with people, seeing their continued poor choices at times, could, you know, he would be sorrowful over that. He would be acquainted, you know, would be grieving over that. Yet, how did he not become disheartened until it all came on him? That's kind of what we worked on a little last week. Bob and then Rick and then...
Actually, this is another one of those passages of why I dislike translations and wish I could read the actual Hebrew. Because in my margins it says that the word sorrows can be used for pains and the word grief can be used for sickness. Well, if you translated it that way, that he was a man of pains and was acquainted with sickness, his entire ministry, he had everybody around him who was either in pain or in sickness, who was always touching their hem of his robe, always going to him to cure their problems. So he was well acquainted with all of that. Not that he internalized it into an emotional exhortation the way the words sorrow and grief connotate, but pains and sickness is a very much more objective that that's where he really was.
Right. Let me look, take a look at that. Because we do want to go the right direction on this. Isaiah 53, verse 3. Okay. Then I would... That's a good point, Bob. And I would have to say... Let me look at it real quick. He was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows, which would be pains, and acquainted with grief, which would be sickness. And like one from whom men hide their face, he was despised, and we did not esteem him. Surely our griefs he himself bore, and our sorrows he carried. Okay. Let me see something real quick. 3, 4, pains and sickness. Yep. I'm going to back up and change what I just said. And I'm willing to back up and change. See? Because verse 4, we have griefs and sorrows defined for us. Let's do a tiny bit of review here. And I have to remember where this was at. Matthew chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8. We studied this a few weeks ago. Starting from verse 15. Matthew chapter 8, verse 15. And when Jesus had come to Peter's home, he saw his mother-in-law lying sick in bed with a fever. And he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she arose and waited on him. And when evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed, and he cast out the spirits with a word and healed all who were ill, in order that what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, saying, he himself took our infirmities and carried away our diseases. Okay, quoting verse 4. Okay, so or Isaiah 53, 4. Okay, so in this case, the New Testament explains the Old Testament. That's one of those basic principles that we've worked on. Even the whole reason we're doing this study, part of it, is so that the New Testament will help us to understand the Old Testament. Okay, here we have told to us that Isaiah 53, 4 is talking about Jesus and the healing of the diseases. He himself took our infirmities, carried away our diseases. So it's in reference to his physical, the healings that he was doing. If you go back to Isaiah 53 then. Isaiah 53, verse 4 says, surely our griefs he himself bore and our sorrows he carried. And you remember when we went through this, we looked at those little side notes, what else it could also be. Pains and sicknesses, and we said that's what it's really talking about, because Matthew tells us that's what it's talking about. So that means in verse 3, same words, grief, sorrows, but also could be pains and sicknesses. Since it's talking about pains and sicknesses in verse 4, it's talking about pains and sicknesses in verse 3. So I stand corrected by Bob and myself here. We'll fix it. But verse 3 then, he was despised and forsaken of men, a man of pains and acquainted with sicknesses. And like one from whom men hide their face, he was despised and we did not esteem him. Surely our pains he himself bore and our sicknesses he carried. Yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God and afflicted. Okay, so in that case, the sorrows and griefs, I'm going to have to go with pains and sicknesses. That is, it's in reference. And now whether that's in reference to himself personally, where it says he's despised and forsaken of men, a man of pains and acquainted with sicknesses, whether that's his own personal pains and sicknesses, and then or others. Verse 4 is definitely talking about others. Verse 3, I think, could go either way. That he, you know, did he have pains? I mean, now whether or not that's what this is talking about, did he have pains? Yes. Did he have sorrows? Sicknesses? Yes. Did he have sorrows and griefs? Yes, he would. he would have still faced those emotions. But as to what Isaiah 53:3 is talking about, I think it is talking about the in his ministry, the dealing, the heal, still on the healings and still on the dealing with people. I told Rick I'd get him, so let me come get Rick, and then I'll come back to you, Tom.
When you're disheartened, that means you've lost your heart. Just like if you're disgraced, you've lost grace. Or if you're dismembered, you've lost your member. Usually it's capital. But so when a person's disheartened, they ask the question why. They've lost their purpose, hopefully just momentarily. And they quit is what it amounts to. Again, not permanently. So Jesus, he could add sorrow. You read about the death of John the Immerser. It seems like, you know, he retreated for a night of prayer. It seems to me like he was absorbing the loss of John. You know, it wasn't like, hey, John, suck it up. That was your job. No, he felt the loss of John. But Jesus never quit. That's the whole point. He never lost his sense of purpose. And it was to go to the cross, secure our salvation, and that was the joy that was set before him. So he was never disheartened. He never quit.
Okay, right. I think I would choose dismemberment over disheartened. Just if I had a choice. Unless the disheartening was temporary. But a permanent disheartening, I think I'd go for dismemberment. Did you guys hear what he had to say up here? Okay. What Rick was saying is that the idea of disheartened is losing hope. That you're just, you've given up pretty much. And so he was saying that although Jesus would have at times felt grief, he would have had been sorry. He gave the example of the death of John the Immerser and how Jesus sought to get away for a night of prayer, you know, just to deal with that. That he would have faced those things, but he didn't lose sight of his purpose. He didn't give up. And so it said his focus was the cross, getting through that, and securing our salvation so that he could bring many sons to glory. So he didn't become disheartened through all those things. Is that pretty close? Okay. Tom, I remember where I was going here.
This will just back up what Rick was saying. Shortest verse in the whole Bible, Jesus wept concerning the death of Lazarus. Now, Jesus, you know, he knew grief. He knew sorrow, just like we do. But like you say, he didn't get disheartened. He stayed the course.
Right, right. I think there is a difference between being disheartened. And I think Rick did a good job of explaining that, that it is, in a sense, a giving up. Of losing your heart, losing heart. And then, you know, so yeah, Jesus, you do have cases where he did have grief, where he did have sorrows, where, you know, Hebrews 4 says that he was, 4:15 says he was tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Hebrews chapter 2 talks about how that he had to be made like us in every way. That being the case, you know, a lot of times we want to, you know, what we want to work on in Scripture is getting an accurate picture of Jesus. You know, the test, the spirit of prophecy is the testimony of Jesus. It's Revelation, and my mind's going blank is where it is. I'm thinking 19, but I may not be right on that. But this, you know, prophecy and everything, the whole point is the testimony of Jesus. This is about Jesus. Now, understanding Jesus in the flesh is going to help us to be able to make the next steps of understanding his resurrection and understanding him in glory. If you can't make it through step one, you're not going to make it to step two or three. So, you know, we do want to get an accurate picture of Jesus in the flesh. And that was that he faced everything that we faced. You know, in some ways we don't want to, don't take this the wrong way, but we don't want to put him up on a pedestal. Like I said, don't take that the wrong way. You could really misquote me on that one and get me in a lot of trouble. But we don't want to say, well, you know, he was just so great. You know, he never had grief. He never had sorrow. You know, I've heard Tom was talking about Lazarus. You know, and I've heard different takes on why did Jesus weep at the, you know, with Lazarus and all. You know, when Lazarus died, you know, why did he weep? And, you know, some have tried to, I mean, I've even heard takes where he was just, in a sense, putting on a show. You know, my personal opinion in that one, and this is an opinion, but my personal opinion was that he actually wept at the grief of Mary and Martha and the others who are around. That's my opinion. That he's just that they had to go through what the, that they actually had to go through all that grief. Part of it brought on by themselves of not understanding everything that he had to offer. But still, you know, I think that's my opinion as to why he wept. But the point is, he had, you know, if he was made just like us, he had emotions like we have emotions. And he had the same struggles that we have. You know, a lot of times we talk about, you know, how he was tempted in every way, just as we are. And you try to usually you think of the major temptations, you know, that, you know, with what was it? The last temptation of Christ. Is that the one where they tried to say that he involved was lusting or something? Or I don't remember. I didn't never actually saw it. But, you know, so they try to focus on usually we'll think about those major type temptations. But, you know, what other kind of temptations go through there? You know, would discouragement, anger, was he not tempted in those realms? But yeah, he was. Which means he had to have all those emotions. He had to, you know, he being made like us in every way. He had to face the same things that we had to face. Yet the emphasis then in Hebrews 4 is yet without sin. So he did face them without giving in to them, as Rick was pointing out, without becoming disheartened. You know, there were hands popping up that I ignored for a while. Let me grab some. Let me grab Randy Rain and then Ken and then see if we can get back to where we were going here. Okay.
I think Hebrews 12, verses 1 through 3 is pretty apropos here. And I just kind of read this here. It says, "Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross." This goes to Rick's point that he endured the cross, seeing what was beyond the cross. Then he says, despising the shame, which goes back to Hebrews 53, which says that he was despised and we did not esteem him, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart or be disheartened. So the encouragement is to us to have our eyes fixed on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, so that we can imitate that faith. We can look beyond what we're going through, so that we can have a purpose, a resolution that will pull us through.
It's a good point. It's a good point. In fact, I'm going to have to think about that last little, so that you may not lose heart, may not grow weary and lose heart. That's good, Randy.
I'll try and add to what Bob had to say, and hopefully this will work with Rick and what Randy had to say. Sometimes we think of the healing pains and afflictions and sorrows that Jesus bore on the cross. And, you know, one of the biggest things, and I think Ken did a good job of bringing this out this morning in the opening, was contained in the book of Exodus in 15. And it said in verse 26, "And God said, if you give earnest heed to the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight and give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians, for I, the Lord, am your healer." And one of probably the biggest sorrows that Jesus bears continually is the fact that we fail to follow his simple direction. And in the book of Revelation, let me see, Revelation 22:2, 1 and 2, it says, "And he showed me a river of the water of life, crystal, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and from the Lamb, in the middle of its street, and on either side of the river was the tree of life." Notice that, how that, in the book of Genesis, the tree of life was what mankind was separated from. Because if he reached out and partook of that fruit, he would live forever. But it comes back up here in the book of Revelation. It's bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And so, really, what we're talking about here is simply just following faithfully, having the author and perfecter of our faith perfect our faith and our faithfulness to his word. And that ties directly to our purpose of presenting the gospel message to the world, and the maturity of the leaves that are hanging on our tree are for the healing of the nations. And if there's somebody that can make a difference in the world today, it is the Christian.
Okay, now let me get Ken. Did you guys hear comments over here? Yeah, pretty much. Let me get Ken here real quick.
Well, the conversation this morning has been hitting. I really appreciate the things that you said, the things that Rain and Randy just finished saying. Because this is in preparing for this morning's opening, I had the thought was, does God experience frustration? And so my mind had to mull all over that, and this has really helped a lot this morning. And where my mind went was Jesus and the cord, the whip of cords that he built and drove, you know. And so I finally came to the conclusion that yes, he did, because of all the things that she said, he had to become like us. And we are created in his image. I mean, both directions, my mind was going to that. And like Randy was saying, I think the difference between the anger that God can feel and the anger that maybe man feels, mortal, one is a fleshy perspective and the other is a spiritual perspective. We tend to, as human beings, we tend to wallow in our emotions rather than see them in the light of the Spirit.
That's a good way to put it there at the end. That is the difference between, like you're talking about, just anger is one example. You know, James chapter 1 talks about the anger of man and the anger of God. The anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. That there is a difference. You know, the anger of God, the righteous anger, is a choice. But it's, you know, yeah, the emotions are there, but what choice do you make? What are you going to do with it? And that's where, you know, Jesus being tempted in every way just as we are, yet without sin, was, yeah, he faced those emotions. He faced those frustrations. He faced that, you know, the discouragements. He faced those things. What did he choose, though? In the face of those, experiencing those emotions, what choice did he make? You know, and in each case, because like Rick pointed out, his focus at the end, and I think Randy was also pointing it out there, his focus to bring many sons to glory helped him to keep going, which is what's going to do us too. Having a focus, having a purpose is how we're going to make it through those things too. Now, I need to bring this out really quick here before we end things up. Go to Isaiah 42. Because we've been focused on one aspect. Interesting to me, the last couple of weeks, the word of God really is. It's living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, and it pierces as far as the division of soul and spirit, of both joints and marrow, able to judge the thoughts and intentions of the heart. The word of God really does get right to our hearts. Because here we are, we're looking at one verse, and it's just like, you got comments coming everywhere, from everywhere. I mean, you know, you can see the wheels turning because this is where, you know, obviously this is something that hits home. You know, that discouragement and the temptation to be disheartened does hit home. But you look at Jesus' example, he wasn't until there was a purpose for it, until he has established justice in the earth. Isaiah 42:4, he will not be disheartened or crushed until he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands will wait expectantly for his law. Now, I would be remiss if I did not take us over to Matthew chapter 12. So let us go to Matthew chapter 12, because if we're focusing on the until, if you look at Matthew chapter 12, you get a little bit different emphasis. Matthew chapter 12, starting from verse 15. But Jesus, aware of this, withdrew from there, and many followed him, and he healed them all and warned them not to make him known, in order that what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, saying, "Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased. I put my spirit upon him. He shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not quarrel nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A battered reed he will not break off, and a smoldering wick he will not put out until he leads justice to victory. And in his name the Gentiles will hope." The disheartened and crushed got left out there, but the until still comes in. He will not quarrel. He will not cry out. A battered reed he will not break off. That's verse 20. A smoldering wick he will not put out until he leads justice to victory. If we're focusing and saying that until from Isaiah was talking about the cross and what he was going to face there, and, you know, he was crushed for our iniquities, all that's happening at the cross. But there is the continuation, which we'll have to get probably next week or the week after, that we're going to get to that stuff. It does go. It's not limited to the cross. You know, Randy and Rick were pointing out that he was looking beyond that. But that was where we said his disheartening and his crushing took place. The until, there are some other things that happens. It says until he leads justice to victory, but a battered reed he will not break off, and a smoldering wick he will not put out until he leads justice to victory. If it was in his crucifixion, and let's just include the whole thing, crucifixion, resurrection, ascension, all of that, if it was at that point is where he's disheartened, is where he's crushed, and that's what the until is talking about, then it also would stand to reason that at that point, too, is when it says that a battered reed would be broken off, a smoldering wick would be put out. So you got to, that's why last week when Tom made the comment and then Bob wanted to come in there, too, I said, hold on, we're going to have to look at both of these, because I knew that part of it was left out, and I knew where the untils went to in the two different places. So that's going to give us something to ponder for the week, because I'm not going to be able to answer that today. But you can chew on it for the week. And I will let Bob make his comment here, because I think I have an idea where it's going. But I'll let him make it.
It'll give you more to ponder. It's going the same place sorrows and grief did. Until he leads justice to victory could also be interpreted as he puts forth judgment to victory. So, ponder that as far as justice.
Right. And that's the other part of what we have to look at. We have about three things we have to look at. We have to look at the judgment, justice aspect. We have to look at and the whole victory. We need to look at the Gentiles, because that comes up in those verses. So we got to look at all that. And finally, we got to finish up with our until. So think about the until. Think about what that's all leading up to. But today, just, you know, consider Jesus did face what we've had to face. And his focus is what took him through. Same is going to be true for us. Where are you putting your focus? If you get your focus on things on the earth, you are going to get discouraged. You are going to get beaten down. You've got to have your focus as Jesus did.